are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I am joined by Ali Mirza, president of Rose Garden Consulting. Thanks for stopping by, joining us from Atlanta.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Glad to have you. So for those who aren't familiar, could you explain what Rose Garden Consulting is?
We're a sales consultancy that helps companies scale their sales efforts. So we'll come in, we'll build out a sales team for you and show you a repeatable process on how you can replicate your star performer and have those results across the board.
So I'm excited to talk to you today because for our entrepreneurs watching and listening, sales, obviously huge, arguably the number one skill set that you need to have. So before we dive into how to be a great salesperson in your business, let's talk about your personal story. How did you get into this?
I got into sales kind of like I believe most people got into sales is completely on fluke. I sold cars for about 3 weeks the first year out of in university, just kind of as a summer job. Sold it for 3 weeks, absolutely hated it. And then quit. It was more of a mutual parting. They didn't want me there. I didn't want to be there anymore. But then the following year, I actually ran into a high school friend of mine who was selling insurance. And so he said, well, what are you doing for the summer? I said, nothing. I need a summer job. And so he said, well, why don't you come sell insurance? So clearly I didn't learn my lesson about sales in the first time. So I said, why not? So I started selling life insurance door to door. And so I was one of those guys, you never saw me before, you never saw or heard from me again afterwards. And we had to sell right there and then on the kitchen table.
Oh, wow.
So that's what I did for a number of years, you know, built up the team, did all of that. But after a while, it just got to a point where I didn't really enjoy it. There was a lot of travel into the country, not a fan of small towns. I like the big city. So after a while, I said, okay, well, this is not what I want to do with the rest of my life. And it was a very bureaucratic process. So I said, I'm just a salesperson, let me sell. So that's when I actually started my company, Rose Garden Consulting. And we actually originally started off as outsourced salespeople. So you didn't want to, you had a company, but you didn't want to have a sales team, but you needed to sell. You would hire us. So we were just like a hired gun. And so we'd come in, sell for you. It was then about 3 years ago, we had a little bit of a pivot when a client of mine came and said, look, Ali, everything's going great, but you get hit by a bus tomorrow. We're back to square one. I said, yeah, you're probably right. And then at that point, he said, well, why don't you write down what you do for us? I said, well, why don't you pay me for it? And that's kind of when he said yes, that's kind of when the light bulb went off and it said, well, this is infinitely more scalable. So ever since then, we've kind of fully transitioned and pivoted into helping companies build out a repeatable process so then they can scale. So you don't just have me or my team. You actually have, you can hire your own people and you know, and you can you know what to do and you can actually control it.
Yeah. And the great thing about your story and how it's come full circle is you didn't think you were a good salesperson in the beginning. You were not a natural born salesperson. In fact, you believe nobody is, right?
No. The only thing that are born are baby boys and baby girls. salespeople are trained. And I learned that from a mentor of mine. And the best way I can communicate that is no one's born with a doctor gene. Nobody's born with an engineering gene, right? So why do people seem to think that there's a sales gene? So, yes, some people are naturally more charismatic or more outgoing, but that being said, that doesn't necessarily translate to sales. There is a certain skill set of knowing what to say and when to say it, as well as how to say it. That can be taught. For some people, they pick it up easier than others, but that's here or there. But that's the way I look at it is, there's no such thing as a born salesperson.
How important is that intangible, that charisma, those people skills that people sometimes grow up with or they don't?
I think that's a huge part of selling, the emotional intelligence. So being able to pick up on little social cues and when you've made someone uncomfortable versus when they're super excited and things of that nature, knowing when to go in for the close and ask for the business versus just because I'm at the end of my presentation doesn't mean I should ask for money because the person clearly isn't invested yet. So I think social cues and emotional intelligence are incredibly important. How you execute that is kind of in your charisma. Again, a lot of that can be learned. Some people naturally will walk into a position with a little bit more than others. But if you don't have that, but you have all the tactical skills to execute a sale, you're still probably not going to go very far because you have to finesse it. You have to massage a sale.
Well, we're going to talk about it all, but let's start there with the charisma. What is your tip to an entrepreneur who would like a little bit more charisma and a little bit of more of that emotional intelligence that you're speaking about?
Well, I think the kind of the maybe the cop-out answer that most people will tell you is listen more, right?
No, it's not, though. I mean, you'd think it's basic, but it's often not basic. A lot True. Of times people listen to respond versus listen to understand.
Correct. 100% agree with you. And I think, but I would like to take it maybe a little bit deeper than that, is maybe ask questions and ask more questions and do... So talking isn't necessarily the problem. It's when you're talking at someone. So if you're talking, try to understand and maybe pull out information and have a purpose for your questions. I think a lot of times when salespeople, they ask questions, it is for the most part, just for the sake of asking questions. They have something pre-cocked in the back of their head. Okay, I'm gonna sell you this, but I'm gonna pretend and I'm gonna ask you a whole host of questions. Because I'm going to pretend like, oh, I naturally got to this. And I think that sometimes seems very contrived and people can kind of see through that. So maybe don't go in with something saying, I'm going to sell you this. To a certain extent, maybe sometimes you can't if you only have one thing to sell. But I think that would be a situation where maybe ask questions, listen to the answer, and then based on what they say, then maybe provide your feedback or something of that nature.
Yeah, because ultimately it's about your customer, your client, whoever it is that your audience is that you're serving, right? Yep. So let's talk about some of those tactical skills. What are those tactical skills that every salesperson needs to possess?
Well, tactically, you need to know how to engage your prospect, your client. You need to be able to start a conversation. I think that's where it starts. So regardless of where, I think it depends on what the situation is. So if you're on the phone, whether it be an email, a networking event, or door to door cold calling, right? So it depends on what that is, and you're going to engage someone a little bit differently depending on the situation. But I think that based on your situation, you really need to understand what is the most appropriate way to engage someone. From there, I think that understanding the subtlety of, if I come into running into your house and saying, "Hi, do you want to buy some insurance?" You're probably going to say, "Please leave," right?
Or
say a little bit more profanity, but you're going to basically tell me to get out. So I think that there needs to be a little bit of a finessing in not only engaging you, but then also leading that conversation towards the sales pitch. And a lot of that I find is best done by way of questioning. I'm a big fan of selling by way of questions, because if I tell you something, you may or may not believe it because they're my words. Versus if I've asked you a series of questions, of course they're going to be leading, right? But if I ask you a series of questions that are leading you down a path, but all of your answers are your words. You've said them, you've spoken them, and you believe them a heck of a lot more than anything that I could ever tell you. So you're actually selling yourself. So I think tactically, selling by way of questions opposed to selling by way of a presentation, significantly better. And then going in for the close, I mean, everyone just, the old Alec Baldwin, always be closing, right? So I think there's a certain element of truth to that, but I think that really it depends on, when do I have your buying temperature at the highest? When are you at the most excited and most committed and invested in what it is that I'm showing you? So it could be a life insurance plan. It could be a car. It could be absolutely anything. But at what point are you at the absolute kind of peak of your excitement? That's when you go in for the close. And the close doesn't need to be something sleazy or shady where like, I'm going to put you in a headlock and say bye now, right? But it could just be talking about next steps, right? So, I mean, it's always very situational, but I think that if you can master those, and then I think from there also is, handling objections. I think that's sometimes people leave too much money on the table simply by saying, well, if I have to handle an objection, that means they're not ready. That's not true, because a lot of times people have a knee-jerk reaction. So anytime you're in a sales situation as the client being sold, it could be literally the perfect thing in the world. But just because you're being sold, you have your knee-jerk reaction saying, well, let me think about it.
Or you
don't want to instantly jump in and say yes, because then you may feel like you were had, even though you want it, right? Even though you know it's a good deal and what you walked in, whether it be price point or whatever, it matches. But you don't want to give in on the first offer. So I think a lot of times if us as salespeople, we're not confident in what we're presenting and not prepared to handle the knee-jerk reactions that people have just as human beings and being complacent and not wanting to make decisions, I don't think you're doing your client. I think you are doing your client quite the disservice by not helping guide their decision. You know, everyone's got that one uncle, right? Everyone's got that one uncle that in the backyard barbecue cookout that's going to say something crazy,
right?
And it's up to you to not fight with that uncle, but just basically not take it so seriously and just have like a nice friendly dialogue back and forth. If you can put yourself in that mindset of that backyard barbecue, that cookout, and you can look at all of your clients as that one uncle, if you can do that, you're going to win so many more deals, not because you tricked someone into buying, not because you were a better salesperson than they were a hard negotiator, more because you effectively communicated to them. And when they walk away, they're like, hopefully they feel like they got something out of that transaction.
Yeah.
They feel that they were benefited.
Well, I have so many follow-up questions, but we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask them, and we're going to talk about your book that you're writing. So sit tight. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstar.
If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business.
Meet Evan Goldberg, founder of NetSuite.
I had to learn that the hard way with my first company. That's why I started NetSuite. I needed to see everything that was going on with my business in one place, so we built the world's first cloud business system. And after 20 years, over 16,000 companies run their businesses on NetSuite. Everything you need to keep growing is in one place. Financials, HR, commerce, customer info, and more. NetSuite gives you the visibility and control you need to make smart decisions and grow with confidence. That's why companies who use NetSuite grow 3 times faster than the S&P 500.
Find out the rest of Evan's story and get your free guide titled 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits at netsuite.com/bigger. That's netsuite.com/bigger for your free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits. Go right now to netsuite.com/bigger.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the president of Rose Garden Consulting. Now, before break, we were chatting about how you almost have to think about it as a backyard barbecue with the crazy uncle, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of that is relationship building, right?
Yeah.
So is that how we should be thinking about it? Is like, ultimately, people buy from people, right? So that personability, that like, know, and trust is really crucial, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So so if someone doesn't like you, they're not going to buy from you. So and they need to trust you, because if they think you're lying, then why would they buy from you? And so I think but that's not where I want to end with that, because I think that everyone just kind of leaves it at that. So going a little bit deeper than that, yes, they have to like, know, and trust you. But I think that the typical cop-out answer that a lot of people have for themselves as to why they're not closing deals is, well, I'm building a relationship. And a lot of the business owners that I work with, they have salespeople that will, especially if the founder is not a salesperson or a self-proclaimed, I don't know anything about sales, I'm a tech guy or I'm a this, whatever, they'll hire a salesperson that hasn't sold anything in 6 months and says, well, I'm building a relationship. I'm building relationships. It's all relationships. Some of the biggest BS I've ever heard right there. There's a lot of people that I walk right into, sell a six-figure contract, and I don't know them from a hole in the ground, but it's if you can properly and effectively communicate, that is building the relationship. So when people try and talk about it from a perspective that they are mutually exclusive, right? You have to first build the relationship and then you can sell. Maybe in some situations, but if every single situation that you're running into, you have to build a relationship first and then sell them, you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
as a salesperson. So I think that a lot of the relationship building happens as you're trying to sell them. And remember, when I say sell, you're communicating.
Right.
If you can communicate effectively, that is building the relationship. It needs to have a particular trajectory. If you don't have that trajectory, then you're spinning in circles doing nothing.
And I'm sure it's different based upon what the product or service is that you're selling. So how do you find that sweet spot for your company? For when is it too early to go in for the sell?
I think you have to, a couple different things. I think you have to identify your buyer profile, right? You have to understand who you're targeting and what their imminent need is, right? And if I'm selling, I don't know, nuclear power plants, right? And I come to you to try and sell you a nuclear power plant, you're going to say, well, that sounds great, but I don't really need one. But now I start building a relationship with you in hopes that, you know, no, that'll never change your need for
right.
So. I think you have to know who it is that you're selling to, number one. And then from there, that will pretty much craft out kind of what the next steps are. And if you don't have that process defined, you're not benchmarking anything. You don't know where you're going. And so that's kind of why we all have a compass, right? So we know where north is and we can go from there. If you don't have that, then you don't have anything. And I think that, I think from there, that's really what defines it. As you know, sales cycles vary, right? Some people have a short sales cycle. Some people have a longer sales cycle. I mean, it depends. When I was selling insurance, there was no BBACs, right? I either sold right there and then, or there was nothing because of the type of insurance I was selling. Versus with some other financial planners, they do build that relationship, and it takes 6 months, a year to close a deal. So there is no one size fits all answer, but I think it really boils down to understanding what you're buying, what your buyer's buying journey is, and what your sales cycle looks like. And if you deviate from there, that's when you need to take a step back and say, okay, I'm not headed in the right trajectory.
Let's talk about follow-up, because obviously it just the first time you engage with a person, especially if it's, you know, via email or social media, that's not going to be enough. How important is follow-up, and what is the best way to follow up?
So follow-up is incredibly important. The saying goes, like, the fortune is in the follow-up, right? I know just a little minute ago, I mentioned that I've walked in and closed a deal, a big deal. That almost never happens.
That's the anomaly, yeah.
Exactly. So if that's all you're relying on, it probably ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So you know, it's one of those things where you definitely have to follow up. The key to the follow-up definitely is letting your prospect, your client, know you're going to follow up. So when you and I are done talking, I'm going to tell you, hey, I'm going to reach out to you. And you can either set a specific time, which is probably preferred, unless you give me a, hey, you know what, this is just not in our budget or something, and I can't shake you. Then it's one of those that, okay, well, you know what, let me touch base with you in a few weeks or a few months or whatever. Setting that expectation, letting you know I'm going to follow up, and then asking for the confirmation, like, that's all right with you, right? Right. Leading them into that. And then, so when you tell me, yeah, follow up with me in 3 weeks, when I follow up with you, I have a higher likelihood that you're going to respond, because that's what ends up happening. A lot of people just ghost you. Right, you try and follow up, and then you turn into that thirsty salesperson that's just, hey,
I just want to check in
every month, and now you, once you're pegged as that, good luck, you're not gonna sell anything. So I think you know, getting confirmation that it's okay to follow up, but then number two, don't just follow up with, hey, just wanted to check in. Every now and again, that's okay, but if that's all your follow up consists of, you're probably not going to close a lot of deals. So make it a reason for the follow up. A lot of times, you know, if I've written an article or something, if I've just published a video, or it doesn't even have to be something I wrote, just something that I saw. If I'm on LinkedIn and I see someone else's article, I'll send it to one of my clients. Be like, hey, read this article, thought it would be very helpful. Read, you know, the second page, third paragraph. You know, talks about XYZ challenges. By the way, how have you solved those? I'm re-engaging you. Right. Because if you told me that this was your problem, and now I'm sending you something, some sort of a resource that's going to help you and let you know that I'm not just hitting you up to try and get some cash from you. Everyone knows, look, I'm following up with you because I want money from you. Because if you try and pretend and play that game, like, I just want to help you out, no one believes you. And then you know what I mean? Like, you're butchering that relationship. So there's a certain level of transparency that needs to be. And everyone seems to think that money's the root of all evil. I mean, that the money is why we do everything. So let's not go crazy.
Let's not kid ourselves.
Exactly. So if I can actually be of some sort of assistance or some sort of a resource. Everyone loves to throw around this word value all the time. Give them value. I don't know what that means anymore, just because everyone's throwing it around so much. But from my perspective, value means something that in my service, in my product, that I think is valuable. But that's from my lens. That's not from your lens. So you may or may not find that valuable. So I need to stop looking at it from a perspective of trying to give you value, but more of, when you open this, when you're going to think, what's in it for me? Why did Ali send this to me? Is it just because he's trying to get money from me? Which, definitely. But if that's the only reason that I can see that you sent it to me, probably not going to respond. But if I see that, okay, well, yeah, he wants to get money from me, but that's number two. Number one, he remembers that I had this challenge and he's actually offering to help me solve it. Well, that's pretty cool. Let me read it. And then now they feel some sort of indebtedness to you,
yeah.
Right? Now there's that reciprocity where they want to at least reply to you and say, hey, thank you so much for sending that to me. Yeah, we haven't solved that challenge. But now you've got that conversation going.
I like it. That's a really good technique. Real quick, you are co-writing a book. Congratulations. Tell us what it's about.
So Aaron Ross and Aaron Ross wrote the first book, Predictable Revenue. Everyone seems to love it. It's a fantastic book. And so he and I got connected up recently, and we were talking about kind of how sales has changed since he wrote that a while back. And so what he wanted to do, and he had kind of a pet project that he was trying to work on, was building a book on closing, specific to for SaaS companies. So we're actually about to co-author that together. We've got most of that written at this point, some of all the big ideas. I would not be the right guy to write a sales book not about money. So
yeah.
There will be a way for you to make money after reading that book.
Very cool. Be sure to check it out. And thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Creeble.
I remember watching my grandmother spend hours doing housework, like washing dishes, doing laundry and hanging it out to dry. They called it Laundry Day because that's how long it took. Labor-saving appliances were among the great advancements of the last century, especially washing machines and dishwashers. They freed generations of women from the drudgery of such chores. By 1983, dishwashers could finish in 30 minutes and laundry took less than an hour. Then, the government began regulating water and energy use. Congress adopted federal standards, and today's appliances take three times longer. Now, many people wash and dry things twice, so they're not saving water or energy. The government ought to tend to its own dirty laundry and leave mine alone. It's just not that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
If you don't know your numbers...
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Terry Wilson is joining us. She's the CEO of I Done This.
Good afternoon.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
So your company, I Done This, what do you guys do?
So I Done This is a very simple tool. It's really asking what you've accomplished every day, hence the name, I Done This. You also get to set your goals for each day and then any blockers. And so if you need to draw that to the attention of the team, you can do that by setting a blocker. And it's based off of the Harvard Business Study by Teresa Ambell, who talks about the progress principle. Getting something done every day really creates intrinsic motivation, and that's what you want your employees to feel when they're in the office or wherever they're working, as we have a lot of remote customers.
So you have basically metrics and analytics around the fact that you can say, hey, look, can we talk about the clients you said they're using this?
Yes.
You said like Uber has like 200 people. And so if they're using this, then they can check in and they can show all the stuff that they're done. So at the end of the day, you're developing metrics as more and more companies start using this to be able to show them, here's how a team of 200 people were more effective, more motivated, more efficient, got more done, and how it compounds. You can actually track that?
Well, so that's something that we're looking with a data scientist to really build. It's going to be more forward focused, where we're hoping to be able to say when projects are going off track and when they're going on track. I've heard that 50% of any timeline you set for a project, the first 50% is wasted. And that is, you know, it just, there's not that rush there. There's not that deadline. And this is something where you're able to share what you get done. There's accountability within your team, as well as personal accountability for saying, this is what I set my goals at the beginning of the day, if you use I Done This like that. And you're able to stay on track and really focus and not get drawn into the emails and the meetings and the phone calls that happen in everyone's life.
Okay, awesome. And the future of your company looks like what? Where is this headed?
So that is the future. Right now, we are just tracking it. And as we have over 200,000 people who have signed up over the last 6 years, we are able to start doing metadata and be able to find out who are the successful people, what are they doing every single day, and how do we encourage them to do that more and more.
Fantastic. And what made you ultimately want to create this? Was something in your life where you were like, oh, I'm just not managing my time well enough, and you created your own little kind of chart to manage your time? What was it like?
So I actually am not the original founder. I came in at the end of 2015 when the original founder, who actually started it to lose weight, wanted to just make sure that he worked out every single day. And that was the overall goal. For me, 2016, we launched a new product. So I'd done this 2.0. We set up a new office in Vegas. I got married. I move across the Atlantic. Lots of things happening. And so for, you know, my personal drive for productivity is driven by wanting to do more and more professionally as well as personally.
Okay, awesome. Take me to the journey. We talked about this, right? I want to go back to the beginning because I always love to hear people's stories. If like from day one as a kid, I had a lemonade stand and I always wanted to be self-employed and own a business, be an entrepreneur. What were you like?
So my father was a small business owner. So I actually did not want to be an entrepreneur whatsoever. I wanted to be as far away as possible because I saw you're always on. You're always thinking about that. Yeah. And then
it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. Well, it can be. But then once I graduated college, I ended up going into Peace Corps. And so I was in West Africa and I really saw, you know, there are things that you can do that matter every single day. And the people you're doing that with is the most important. And so when I came back, I did found my first startup, Exceptional Cloud Services. And I found that as an entrepreneur, you're able to control what you're doing and bring a work environment where other people want to spend the most of their life, working together. So that's really what it is for me, is creating a team that is happy and productive and keeping everyone accountable.
Well, how do you create the great team? Like, where are you finding these people? Because I think that's something that a lot of entrepreneurs talk about on the show is, you know, it's either hard to find talent or if you do find them, it's hard to keep them. So how are you doing that?
So there's a lot of different ways. I mean, you always, you know, we have started where you just find people off of ads, Craigslist ads, and you have to screen a lot and that moves forward. And then you also just develop networks. And, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in the Bay Area. There's a lot there. We, in our office in Las Vegas, we actually find that there's already an existing mentality of customer service and the customer is already right. And so we can teach the SaaS side, but I think the personality and the cultural fit is the thing that is most priority as we go through the interview process.
So many people have their locations in Vegas, I feel like. Why did you choose Vegas as the location?
Because, you know, I love the Bay Area, but where we find is the sales and marketing really can be done anywhere in the world. And Las Vegas is one of those places that there's a hub. We are a remote team. So we have a presence in San Francisco, in Las Vegas, in Japan, and in New Zealand. And if there's 41 million visitors a year to Las Vegas. And so everyone could kind of come in for our team huddles and get together. And then you can have a bit of fun in the city as well.
I was going to say, yeah, and you can have a little fun and gamble, go see a show.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got CEO of I Done This, Terry Wilson, is joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. And I want to talk about, what do you feel like is a habit or a ritual that you've developed in your life that has either helped serve you personally or professionally?
So one thing that I think actually crosses both sides is I have an I Done This setup with a friend of mine where we track every day three things that we're thankful for. It might sound very simple and, you know, a little yogi or something like that, but I find that it could be a teammate who's created something really strong. Or it could be something that I'm thankful that I was able to fit in an hour of rock climbing today. And it's just looking back, reflecting, and appreciating everything that we have.
What are you doing on social media? I feel like this is something that can be outsourced to a lot of
people. So that's something we definitely have insourced. So content marketing has been our most successful channel. And so to be able to have content marketing reach the right people who are relevant, then we need to make sure that aligns very closely with our social media.
So are you doing targeted ads?
We do targeted ads.
Okay.
And that's because we, you know, retargeting is something that we find big on our blog. We have, you know, people come and spend 15 minutes reading our blog posts. These are meaty concepts that people are finding very interesting years after we publish them. And so we know if you're interested in becoming a better manager, if you're interested in team communication, ultimately, I've Done This is something that can help you do both.
Okay. And what are the types of things that really move the needle for you guys? Are you doing video? Because that's the big trend right now. Everybody's putting content on video. And if you're not, then you're missing out on a huge opportunity. What's working for you guys? Is it getting featured in articles like, you know, Fast Company, Huffington Post, Wall Street Journal, or is it just creating content on your own blog?
So we've largely focused on content on our own blog. Haven't hopped on the video train yet. I'd like to see more metrics and, you know, longevity and sustainability. Being a 6-year-old startup means that we're not always the trendiest, but we're all about sustainability and growth and being able to continue to serve our existing customers. One thing that we find is we write blog posts that come directly from conversations with our customers. So we want to know what their current pains are, what their current concerns are, and then we're able to reach more customers or potential customers who share those concerns.
Well, talking about concerns, I want to shift and talk about adversity for a little bit here. Mm-hmm. People relate a lot more to failures than they do success. So what was a season of adversity? You said you've been in business for 6 years now with this company. Mm-hmm. Could have been something in your personal life. It doesn't matter. What was a season of adversity that you overcame and ultimately, you know, found a gift in? Because I feel like most people that come on the show, something terrible happened in their life or in their business, but they found a gift in it and it's something that serves them now today.
Well, what I can think of top of mind was something that just happened in 2016, most recent, is we launched a brand new I Done This 2.0. And this is something looking at much larger organizations, you know, Twitter and Airbnb, you know, 100 plus seats, whereas our average is a little bit smaller, around 10 team members. And we took away some of the features that had been built into I Done This 1.0 after 5 years. And we made, kind of pulled the Band-Aid off real quick and moved everyone over. And we got very vocal customers. You know, all year long, you're asking, you know, please make some time to talk to me and give me feedback. And now all of a sudden we have more feedback than we can handle. Yeah. But those conversations mean that we're at a better spot than we were before.
I want to actually shift gears on a question here as the last one on this topic is price points. You guys said your price point is between, name the prices again, $12.50?
$12.50 up to $45 per seat.
Okay. Did you guys test those price points?
So we've tested those. I hate even putting that on the record because we are always testing. Yeah. We think we add a lot of value for each team member, and we want to make sure that that gives us a sustainable way. So we're
able. I thought it was cheap.
Thank you. Great.
I thought that was very affordable. Like if you can, especially if you can just be even a little bit more productive or motivated, then $12 to $45 a month is nothing. If you can't quantify that as a return, then you probably shouldn't use the service, but it's such a low price point. That's why I was shocked.
Well, so what we find is that we actually have a calculator where you're comparing it with your salary for your average teammate. And if you make them that, you know, fraction of a percentage more productive, then it pays for itself. I had a customer once who said he knows in the first month of when he purchased I'd Done This, that payback was already done in the first week.
Oh, of course.
And so it was gravy after that. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, invaluable. And so it's really getting the adoption, making the having the team use it every day so they can see their own personal progress. And it allows the manager to not be the bad guy and asking, hey, what have you done today? What have you done today? Once they intrinsically become motivated, then that is ultimately going to be the most successful.
Which is a good point because no manager wants to be the one that's like constantly looking over somebody's shoulder, reminding them. And then it makes the kind of the team morale, I think, overall a lot better. So somebody says, I've done this. I want to check it out a little bit more. It's only $12.50 at the base. Where can they go and check this out?
idonethis.com. So you can find everything you need there. You can chat with us right there. So we're there to help.
I'm shocked that domain was available. It seems like somebody probably would have taken that. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Terry.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we connect a community of entrepreneurs. If you'd like to be a part of it, you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, or online at businessrockstars.com.
Investing in yourself as an entrepreneur is one of the best things you can do. Here's a few ways to keep making investments in yourself, even if you're an overwhelmed entrepreneur. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, go back to school. School itself can provide new connections and spark creativity. Finishing a degree or starting a new one can make a big difference. Plus, just about every school has a part-time program. Number two, physical health. If your ability to work is the most essential thing to your business success, it makes no sense to risk it. Staying healthy is basically an investment in your business. Number three, networking. Most people view networking as an opportunity to advance their business, which it is, but it's also just as important in building personal connections. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute. Bye.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's R-A-N-K to 79645.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/free. That's ziprecruiter.com/free. ziprecruiter.com/free.
Hey, have you ever thought to yourself,
to automate your sales process? I'm Alex Worley, and here to help us answer that question, my guest, Sean Connect, co-founder of Pride Bites. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you have a super top secret process for automating your sales. Tell me
exactly.
All about it.
Super top secret.
Not secret anymore. Yeah.
So what we've done at Pride Bites is we've kind of eliminated cold calling, and we kind of automated our cold emailing process using email sequences. So what we do, we use our email platform, which we use HubSpot, but there's many out there that you can choose from. I'm sure the one that you're using has this process. What we do is we create a 5 email sequence. So it's 5 separate emails, but they go hand in hand with each other. So the first one would be introducing yourself, your product, and what you're selling. Then the other follow-up, the other 4 follow-ups are kind of, hey, I haven't heard back from you. This is what we're like, kind of, and then reselling your product. And the 3rd one, the 4th one, the 5th one are kind of similar to that. So you're always following up. And the only time that those cold calls or cold buyers would get this email is if they didn't respond to the first one.
So once they respond, you take them out of the email list.
Exactly.
That's automated.
Technically, it's automated. So I don't have to. So once I enter them into this sequence, what we call email sequencing, I send 1 email to you per se, and then you get it today. Say you don't respond. 1 week later, you'll get email 2.
So each email sent once a week until they respond.
Yeah, and you can set it. You can send it once a day or every day, every week, every 5, however you want.
But it's worked well for you to do once a week.
Every 7 to 10 days is kind of my sweet spot.
Yeah, because there's a fine balance between being too naggy, but then also letting too much time go on where they forget about you.
Yeah, my personal motto, professional persistence. So if you're following up and being persistent in a professional manner, no one's going to get mad at you. Obviously, there's the outliers where people will be like, stop emailing me, but those are few and far between.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the copy is where it really, really can solidify whether or not you're being professional or maybe too much. So give me an example of some of the verbiage that you use to be professionally persistent.
So on the email 2, 3, and 4, we do something as, I know I apologize for the consecutive emails, or the 2nd and 3rd and 4th emails of the follow-ups are, I apologize for sending you multiple emails, but I have something that might be really interesting to you, or I just need 5 minutes of your time. And these are all short and sweet emails. You never...
Very short,
150
sweet,
words or less.
Yeah.
I would suggest try to have a call to action, whether it's schedule a meeting with me and include a scheduling link. So all they need to do is click the link, all your calendar's there. They click it and they're done. No, and that'll also reduce the back and forth.
Make
hey, are you available
easy.
At 1 p.m.? No, yeah. But how about 3? How about tomorrow?
And get to the bottom line. Like, what is it that you want? Say that in a obviously professional, kind, gentle way, but be clear.
Yeah, and then I would say on the last email, email 5, I would say, okay, clearly this isn't working with us. Please let me know why, so I can be better at my job. Is the timing not right? Do you want me to follow up with you in 6 months? Are you not interested in our product altogether? Do you hate me? You know, like, you can obviously make
circle
it fun.
Circle one.
Make it fun, obviously, because I mean, at the end of the day, you want
to
connect with this
person.
Yeah,
if you can make them laugh a little bit, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, so once someone does respond, whether it's after email 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, they get automatically taken out of the email sequence, so they won't get any automated emails. And then the email in your inbox is going to be a warm lead.
Yeah, as soon as that they respond, whether it's after the first, second, third, fourth, whatever it is.
You know they're interested.
Yeah.
Which is half the battle. So instead of sifting through a bunch of cold emails and cold calls where you know they're not interested, you're only answering warm leads, per se.
Yeah.
And that's when you kind of schedule the phone call to get down to the bottom line of, okay, so how can we work together?
So how do you first come up with this list? Just the old-fashioned Google way? I guess that's not old-fashioned, you know, obviously the best way nowadays.
There's multiple ways to prospect these days. Obviously, at the end of the day, to get the most quality leads, doing your homework, doing the actual research will by far be the most efficient way. Mm-hmm. But it is a little bit more time-consuming. Actually prospecting, whether it's Google or now with social media being so popular, finding people on social media and because their contact is usually there.
Yeah. So anywhere you can find their email address, the goal is just to make a list of all the local stores.
Yeah.
Find the person who's buying, find their email address, add them to the automation system.
Exactly. Google, Yelp, LinkedIn. There's a number of sites that you can use. There's also companies that you can buy lists based off what's called SIC codes. Every business is affiliated to an SIC code. So for us, we would buy a list of 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 companies pertaining to certain SIC codes, whether it's categories or specifically.
So give me an example of a company you can buy a list from.
One of the companies that we use that we like is called List Giant. They send us an Excel sheet of every SIC code that's out, which is thousands.
But in your industry?
No, general. They'll send you every...
So how do you sift through
all
of them?
So we search via keywords that we're looking for. Say we're looking for a certain category that we want to target, like breweries or food and beverage.
Okay, so there's a search component where you can narrow it down.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And then we say, okay, we want 5,000 or 10,000. They obviously have tiers and they give us their email address. And then we enter them into the email sequence. So right now, as we are doing this interview, my email address is probably emailing a couple hundred people as we speak.
Yeah.
And the only people that are responding to me are the ones that are interested. So I don't have to waste my time on, is so-and-so interested? I'll know that person is interested because there'll be an email in my inbox saying, hey, I saw your email. I'm interested. Let's talk.
That's awesome. Yeah. Amazing. Thanks for all those secret tips on selling. Really
don't
appreciate your time. Okay, we won't use this. Just kidding. My guest, Sean Connect, co-founder of Pride Bites. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.